He scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla in the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Hello and happy Friday. Let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. It's Friday, October 18th. Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We have got a fun hour upcoming because it's time for the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Thoroughbred Racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. It's Steinberg, and you know him, you love him from such things as the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out. Also from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Eric Francis joins us for the next hour. Hello, EF. How are we doing, brother?
I'm fantastic, my man. How are you?
I am very impressed. I've already spoken to you once prior to this. Now, I just am so impressed at how your voice sounds, because there are years after the wildly popular Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out where you sound like death. You actually sound pretty good. You sound pretty good, my friend.
Yeah. Maybe I'm getting more mature
Let's not take it that far.
Yeah, responsible. I was being responsible last night to some degree anyway. But yeah, hey, thanks for coming last night. It was a lot of fun, and really appreciate the support. We had a couple of people who came up to me and said, we heard it on the radio that there were still a couple tickets left at the door, and so we showed up. So thanks for the late plugs.
Good. I'm glad.
Money because of you.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk? No, you know what? We'll talk more about the Pizza Pig Out a little bit later, and I was going to ask you about the one thing, but that's just for you and I. We'll get to some of the fun things you've written over at Sportsnet.ca this week, because the Razzie death stare and Justin Kirkland's journey to the NHL, I think, were both really, really fun reads over at Sportsnet.ca from you this week. But we might as well jump in on what the biggest topic is surrounding this team, and it's pretty simple. Right now, this is a 4-0 team against all odds. Well, not against all odds, but defying many external expectations anyway. Third time in franchise history, the Flames have started 4-for-4 to start a season, and nobody on the outside drew it up that way. But that doesn't mean that they're not full marks for it, and that doesn't mean it hasn't been a really fun, entertaining start. This has been a pretty fun team to cover through the first week and a bit of the season.
Hey, the buzz around town is fantastic, right? I mean, anytime the hometown team is either surpassing expectations or living up to expectations, either way, when you start 4-0, I don't care who you are in the NHL, outside of maybe Edmonton, everybody's like just jumping, you know, it's just fun. Everyone's got an extra bounce in their step. At the Pig Out last night, you know, Ryan Husker was there and Don Maloney and some other, you know, staffers and you know, all they heard about was how excited people were. All we heard about when you talk to people around town was just how much fun it is. Forget about expectations. That makes it more exciting when there were no expectations. But, you know, and I know you guys started talking already about percentages for teams that go 4-0 and what percentage of the time those teams make playoffs. I couldn't ignore that. And that's fun talk, and I thought those numbers were interesting. But I don't think people are too worried about that right now. I'm sure there are people in the city who now have a different expectation level just four games in, you know, just based on what they've seen. But, you know, I think there's just so many reasons to be optimistic moving forward, whether it's this year, next year, the year after. Some of the guys who are going to make up the future of this organization are really showing tremendous promise. I don't know if it's ahead of schedule, but it's definitely impressive in a lot of people's eyes. So exciting. And when guys like Kirkland step in and do so with a bang, and you know, it harkens back to last year when Pospisil and Zeri did it. And who's next? You know, who's the next guy that's going to come in? Are we going to see Sam Morton at some point in time jump in and really grab a hold of it? Like, that's what people, I think, are so excited about. But in terms of the team on the ice right now, you got to love the way they play in terms of their work ethic. And that's something we saw last year, too, mm-hmm. under Ryan Huska. I think they bought in. They said they were going to be the hardest team to play against in the league. You know, and I'm not saying they are the hardest in the team, you know, but the work ethic is there. And really, as a fan, win or lose, that's really all you can ask for, really, is that they go out and they bust their hump and they're somewhat entertaining along the way. And there's something to be excited for in the future. And I think all those things are going for the Flames right now.
Well, there's two things for me that have been kind of constants in this four-game start. Like, they've won games in different ways. All four wins have been different. The way the games have gone, the way the Flames have come out with the 2 points, all different. But there are two constants for me. One of them is what you just said, no doubt. Like, their work rate is off the charts, and it was something that stuck out to me all year last year. Like, Francis, we could probably count on one hand how many times last season over 82 games, despite the fact that they missed the playoffs by 17 points, there were maybe four times, handful or less, where they were the second hardest working team on the ice, or where they were just straight up outworked by the opposition. Sometimes the goaltending let them down, or sometimes the other team was more talented, but it was rarely because they were just not working. To a man, they worked their tail off for that head coach last year, and that is carried over to this year. The work rate has been outstanding, straight up check mark. And then the other thing is, and I'm curious if you've picked up on this as well, is that, I don't know, the way that they're playing, the way that they're carrying themselves on the ice as well as off the ice, they seem like they're a team that's got a bit of a chip on their shoulder. And like, hey, you know, underestimate us at your own peril. Like, they believe they're a good team inside that room. They believe that they're capable of a lot inside that room. And as much as I believe them, where they say, we don't really care what you guys think on the outside, I do think that they're using it to motivate them, and as they should. Why wouldn't you, when you believe one thing and it feels like the rest of the world believes something else, use that? And it just feels like they've played with a little bit of an attitude through the first four games, and that's been a big constant for me too.
Yeah, I think the veterans really have taken to heart the idea that they need to lead by example, and they really take that personally, and they're quite proud of it. You know, Kadri's done this now for 2 years where he's just said, you know what, put two rookies on my wing. And I didn't necessarily sign up for this, but I am all in terms of teaching them, trying to make them be better, but also showing the standard. And then the rookies, they're playing so hard because they're trying to prove they belong. And they're trying to you know, continue to get better every single day. And there's depth on this roster. That's not something I think we thought we'd be talking about a whole lot this year, but there's significant depth, and you have a game that's not quite up to the standards or two, and you'll be in the press box, or you might even be in the minors real soon, because they have a next man up mentality and they have the depth to be able to call upon that. Look, like the other day when they played back to back, their second game was in Edmonton. They pulled Jake Bean out of the lineup for no reason other than we just wanted some fresh legs in there.
We want to get Tyson Barrie in.
We want to try Tyson Barrie because we know that he's a 6A defenseman, 6B defenseman, whatever you want to call it. And the same thing with Klapka. I think a lot of people would tell you he was one of their favorite players probably the first two games. But then he comes out of the lineup for no fault of his own. Just, hey, we've got other guys who we want to take a look at in that position. And sure enough, that third line, doesn't matter who it is in there. At the middle, they've had two different centermen and two different right wingers. And in all four games, I would say that line is as entertaining and maybe as effective as any line in the entire. Like I think people are talking about the fourth line more than any other line right now, which is very abnormal. And of course, the constant and all that is Ryan Lomberg. So, like, I literally think, Pat, we could go through almost all 12 forwards and probably four defensemen and, of course, the two goalies. And speak glowingly about what we've seen so far. And again, it's four games in. That's all we have to go on. And I'm just saying that everything's quite positive so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's flip it on its ear. Who's a negative right now? And I don't want to go down that road because everything is positive right now. But I would say Miramanov is the only guy right now who I haven't seen anything where I'm like, wow, it's look at this and this and this. He just kind of hasn't shown a lot. Do you think that's fair? Like, I'm not trying to pick on Miramanov. I think he's going to be, I think he is and will be a good defenseman. I think he's top four material, but I just don't think they've seen it yet. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think that's a big reason why he's trending towards being a healthy scratch on Saturday in Seattle, because I think, and I even said this over at Sportsnet on the old mailbag on Friday, because somebody asked about him.
I enjoyed it.
And I said, like, you know, the where I would put Miramanov so far is just okay. And when you've got as much competition as the Flames have right now, just okay might land you in the press box for a game or two. So that's kind of what I've seen from Miramanov. Like, look, Anderson and Weegar are never, there's never a concern about them being in the press box. But you know what? Braden Pahal has made an impact and has been far better than just okay. Like, he has really taken a step and cemented himself as right now, there's been zero doubt that Pahal's in every game right now. And the same is true with Kevin Ball. We didn't know a ton about Ball, but he's been really good for them, and he's been a perfect foil for Rasmus. And so you're like, oh, well, Kevin Ball, he's kind of letting this competition raise his game a little bit. And so those two have been no doubters. So now all of a sudden, if you're Jake Bean, where you weren't bad, but yeah, you're okay, just okay. Well, you come out for a game, Barry comes in, and then let's get Bean back in, because as you said, he hasn't really done anything to play himself out of the lineup. And now that's the situation with Miramanov.
Yeah, and no one's worried about him. I think they see him as being one of the guys moving forward with this organization that will be here as a top four defenseman. So a game or two outside of the lineup, I don't think it's going to hurt him. I think it'll only help him in the long run. And they have that luxury to be able to do that. And if they wanted to, they could even put Joel Hanley in at any point in time too. So, you know, he's kind of the forgotten man in all this. So, but hey, again, you know, I don't think any of this is possible without the goaltending they've received as well. And Wolf's numbers are spectacular. He's 2-0, played both games at home, and he's been very, very good. Stopped 68 of 72 shots for like an otherworldly, you know, save percentage. Vladar's numbers aren't as sexy because that first period in Vancouver was an absolute chaos. Two of the goals were power plays. The third came right at the end of a power play. Like, I'm not really sure it's fair to hang it on him, because I still think he was a big part of why they were able to come back in that game. All I'm saying is I remember talking to Don Maloney just recently, and he basically said, look, it's all going to come down to our goaltending. Like, if these two guys can handle this load, and it's quite a task to ask these two youngsters to do that, then you know, we're going to be fine. And if they don't, then that's where the real problems are going to creep in. So far, so good. And I just think it's almost to the point, there's so many other things going on. Everyone's taking the goaltending almost for granted. No one's really talking about the goaltending, but they should be, because I think it's kind of the backbone of all of it.
For sure. And it's been really good so far. I fully agree. What do you make of people talking about the playoffs already? And you know, Connie, if you're listening right now, like, I apologize, because I know that they're probably, I'm sure that Ryan Huska and Craig Conroy are probably like, shut up about the playoffs for four games in, please. Like, but it's what everybody's buzzing about. And you're seeing those, you talked about it, graphics galore about how teams typically do if they finish four, if they start 4-for-4 and take eight of a possible 8 points since the 05-06 season, 71% of teams make the play. Like, that's really interesting to see all the numbers that come out. I'm not ready to sit here and say, oh yeah, yeah, they're more than likely going to the playoffs after four games. But I am willing to say, and I said this earlier this week, you know, I was the biggest wet blanket 10 years ago when they got off to a really nice October into November, and the year that they defied all expectations, I was a giant wet blanket. I was like, no, they're no good. They're not gonna make the playoffs. They're not, their percentages. And I think that probably pissed a lot of people off, because you're trying to have fun with this really fun upstart surprising team, and some jackass on the radio is saying, no, don't be excited. They're no good. A, I don't think this team's no good. I think they actually have played really, really well and are full marks for their 4-0 start. But like, I think we're not that far off from them building enough of a cushion that they're going to have to actively play themselves out of making the playoffs.
Okay, slow down. That's where I'm going to stop you.
I truly believe that, though.
No, come on. Four games.
I said they're close. I said, like, give me about 2 weeks. Yes. If they continue to play this way, if we're talking about them at the end of October being 4 or 5 games above 500,
I honestly think that they've put themselves, they can put themselves in a decent spot to turn it in from a surprising start to now being on track to protecting and being kind of in that advantageous spot the rest of the year.
Okay, all right. So you're saying they're close to having a cushion if it's a couple more weeks, which would mean what? In a couple more weeks, they'd have 6-7 more games under their belt. You're saying if they win half of those, or just a little more than half, then that gives them, that keeps them 4 or 5 games above 500, and then they're in a place where they'd almost have to play their way out of it. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. I'm not willing to go that far.
Let me say this. Remember 2 years ago, they started 5-1, the best 6-game start in franchise history. Then they lost like 7 in a row, and they did. They played themselves out of it last 2 years ago, the last year under Daryl Sutter, and could never recover.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't want to get too carried away. There are a lot of people talking like you are right now. There are also people like me going, hold the phone.
Hey, back the truck up, Steinberg.
But I don't want to crap on anybody who's going all optimistic on this, because everything I've seen so far is full of optimism and excitement from a fan standpoint. Like, I get it. Things are trending in the right way in every way. So, I don't want to rain on that parade. I think where the danger comes, or what people fear, is that the overall play, and I love that you addressed this in your mailbag on sportsnet.ca there, like, because I think it's just great that, people are going to say, well, don't change the plan. Like, we're still rebuilding here. Let's not do what we did back in 2015, 16. We had one good year. We made the playoffs, and all of a sudden we started, grabbing guys and trading for guys and sending out assets out the door too early. I really sense in talking to the front office that's not going to happen. Now, listen, there is talk that they're going to need more centermen. There's no question. They've said that all summer long, that they're going to need another experienced centerman on this team. I love the idea of letting guys like Justin Kirkland. Look, that's just one of the great stories we've seen in hockey the last couple of years. We can get into that in a bit. But, I love seeing that. I love Kevin Rooney as a person. I would love to see him still get more rope and get that job back. And, then I don't know what you do with Kirkland. Like, these are the good problems that they have right now. Tough decision, who to send down, who to keep up. But, I was going through it in terms of centermen. And, listen, they said all summer long, we want to add another experienced center. They weren't able to do it because they're tough to find in the National Hockey League, and they're very expensive. But when they lost Cole Schwind, I know a lot of people that day said, oh, phew, thank God we didn't lose Jacob Pelche or Devin Cooley. Well, the Cole Schwind loss was a big one for the front office because he was the only right-handed guy listed. He was one of the last cuts, too. They wanted him to kind of be one of the first guys they were going to call up this year. He was the only right-handed center in the entire organization, basically. I just wanted today I was looking at, I was listing the entire depth chart of all the centers in the organization. And after Kevin Rooney / Justin Kirkland as their fourth center, it starts to get pretty, you're looking at Sam Morton, who's never played in a game in the National Hockey League. He just comes out of college last year. Rory Kearns is only 22. He's had a great start with the Wranglers, by the way. 5 goals in 3 games. He might be the next guy up. I don't know. Nikolayev's not ready. Clark Bishop's 28. I'm going deep down the list now, and you get one or two injuries, and that's going to happen this year. Like, listen, thank God for the Flames that the Pospisil experiment is working out. And I think even if it didn't, I think they were confident that the Connor Zary center experiment could work out. But they needed at least one of them to be a productive centerman. Otherwise, they were really going to be short of centers in this organization. So that's nothing new, that they're going to need a center and that they're looking for one, and they'll probably get one at some point. But don't be fooled into thinking that that's deviating from the plan or starting to put more apples in the basket for this year. It's something that's always been on their radar, and it is a pressing need, especially with the loss of Cole Schwind the other day.
Yeah, and I think ideally, and what I think, Craig Conroy has been pretty adamant about this going back to the draft in the summer. The idea is they'd like to add not just a center, but somebody that fits the vision. Somebody who's got, think 25 and under, think somebody that can jump in, play NHL minutes right now, but is younger. Those are the type of players that Conroy's been after, not exclusively, but there's, since he took over, those are the types of players that Craig Conroy has looked at. And that's why Sharon Govich was the guy they targeted in the Toffoli trade. It's why Grushnikov was the guy they targeted in the Tanev trade. It's why we already mentioned Miramanov. It's why he was one of the guys they targeted in the Hanifin trade, because these are guys that they feel are younger, but are also able to step in now. And so I think if you're thinking about a center, think that type of range. Somebody who can come in and play and is ready for the NHL and has NHL games under his belt, but isn't 29 or 30 years old. And that's kind of what we're talking about. And that hasn't changed. That was something that they were interested in the summertime. And lo and behold, after a 4-0 start, it's still something that they're interested in.
Yeah. No, hey, the Schwint situation really did affect them. They were really upset about that day. Not only because they thought they were thinking he was probably pretty close, but also because he was that right-handed guy. And he was fitting into that perfect kind of, that age range that they were kind of looking for. So, I'm not sure when they're going to add a center, but they will. And that's nothing new. And it's not something people should be upset about. But, hey, look at, what the Flames have done over the last four games. Like, it just hit me when you mentioned Sharon Govich. Like, there is an argument out there that he might have been their best player last year, or certainly one of their best players. They're 4-0 this year without him in the lineup.
Yeah.
Like, when I talk about how everything, 12 players deep up front and four defensemen at least deep in the back, is all positive, like, that's another thing. Like, Sharon Govich is going to come back at some point soon and give them even more depth and options and scoring power. So, anyway, again, let's not get too carried away, but all we can go on is what they've shown us of late, and it's been really, really exciting.
Yep, it has been. And I do think that message of them not deviating from the plan is an important one, because, like, you get it. You've been in this market a long time. Since they made the Stanley Cup final more than 20 years ago, it has been, save for 1 year, and that was the first year of Sean Monahan in 2013-2014. Save for 1 year, everything has been about making the playoffs and winning now. Everything has been about staying as competitive as you possibly can to try to get to the playoffs. And sometimes that's paid off with great years, like 18-19 or 21-22. Like, those were both outstanding years. And sometimes it has... and more often than not, has kept them in the mushy middle and frustrated fans and like, well, I'm sick of them finishing 2 or 3 points out of a playoff spot. But because fans have been conditioned that way, I understand why there'd be some skepticism that, oh, they're off to a good start. What if they're still playing well in January? They're going to completely deviate from their plan and they're going to start trading away first-round picks for 29 and 30-year-olds. I understand that worry. I really do empathize with it. But I think it's important to point out that I really don't believe that's the way they're going to go about things this time around.
No. And listen, I get it. It's I called it the high build, the hybrid rebuild.
Yeah.
The high build. So when you're trying to do that, listen, along the way, if this keeps up and these guys keep going, and fans are loving it right now, but I know there are skeptics out there going, all this is going to do is cost us that first round pick to Montreal that we're supposed, we have to give up for Sean Monahan. And, I think people are kind of up to speed on the complexities of that whole situation. But if they finish in the bottom 10 this year, then they get to keep the first round pick that they have to give Montreal. And Montreal takes their second first rounder, which will be a Florida's pick, which is like 30th or wherever they end up. Anyway, I don't want to get into the weeds in that, but if they have a great season this year and they don't finish in the bottom 10, that's going to cost them a top 10 draft pick. That hurts. That hurts. But that's a casualty of the high build. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. The high build. I like that. That's very, That's very, very
what I'm going with.
It's very clever of you, Mr. Francis. Eric Francis, Pat Steinberg along with you. This is the Eric Francis Hour. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Lots still to get to. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Eric Francis Hour on this Friday continues with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. EF, we need to spend a little time on the 22nd Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out, which went Thursday night at Cowboys. Dude, another successful pizza pig out. Congratulations, my friend.
I appreciate it, my man. Listen, nobody, I don't want to bore people, but the people who came, I thank them all. The pizzerias, they're the backbone of the whole thing. And there were, I think there were 30 of them that donated over 500 pizzas. They are the stars of the show. They are the ones who are going to help us raise. I think the total is going to be, it'll be very close to $100,000 from last night, if not over it. And so thank you to everybody. But, you know, I didn't, you know, I invite a lot of people in the community, the Flames alumni, a whole bunch of Perry Barazan was there. And you see a lot of the familiar faces, you know, like Counselor Sonia Sharp showed up, you know, Ryan Huska showed up. I didn't know he was coming. Don Maloney showed up. I didn't know they were coming. Like, they were invited, of course, but you know, these guys are busy, you know, and they're in the midst of the season. I didn't think they'd come, but just meant a lot to me that they would show up. And so many other people that showed up, all the media and the, and you know, Stamps alumni and Shrekos, Zizekovic, all the, it was great. It's just old home week for me. So thank you again for you guys coming and doing the show from there and then for the support. But yeah, let's talk sports. I appreciate it. You've given me more than enough airtime on the pickup, but thank you, Calgary, for your generosity. We're helping a great thing. Great organization with Kids Sport, yep, and their equipment bank.
All the proceeds from the 22nd Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out going to Kids Sport Calgary. And honestly, when some point next fall, when Francis announces the date for the 23rd Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out, if you've heard us raving about it, if you've heard us talking about it, it's all legit. It really is one of the best nights of the year. Okay. The Rasmus Anderson death stare, or the Razzie death stare, as it's becoming known inside that Flames locker room. What's going on here? I listened in to you chat with Raz a little bit about it earlier in the week. You wrote about it earlier this week on Sportsnet.ca as well. I know you talked to Mackenzie Weegar a little bit about it. What's happening here? Why is Rasmus Anderson trying to pick fights with fans of the other team?
You know, we all know, I think, in Calgary that he's a guy who plays with almost, you know, as much emotion as anybody on the team. And when the losses were piling up over the last couple of years, like, he's the guy in the locker room. You're just like, wow, he is taking this hard. And it's part of the reason, I think, why people think that, you know, if this season goes the way people expected it to go, he'll be one of the guys who asked for a trade, or just kind of makes it clear he's not going to re-sign here after next year. Anyway, it all kind of leads to the notion that he just plays with a chip on his shoulder. He takes all these preseason predictions, you know, probably he didn't like them, you know, and he kind of made that clear when we asked him about it earlier. So he scored both his goals this year in the opposing buildings. The first one in Vancouver was a real nice snipe, and he was right next to the boards, and he instantaneously turned to one of the fans and gave them the Razzie death stare. And then in Edmonton, he undressed Connor McDavid, which is kind of funny because on behalf of all defensemen in the world, they all must have thanked him for doing that, because he's returned the favor a million times. But he undressed McDavid and sniped again. But he was kind of at the middle of the ice, but he made a beeline to the glass to stare down a fan in the front row. And it's just kind of like, hey, screw you. You guys, nobody believed we could do this, and look what we just did, sort of thing. He told Ryan Lomberg he was going to do it in that first game at Edmonton between the first and second intermission. He said, like, it's time to go score a goal. Between the first and second period, it's time to stare a goal, score a goal and stare down an opponent. He did that, I guess, for his 100th point in Vancouver a couple of years ago. And he said from time to time it comes back, but now it's kind of his thing. And Mackenzie Weegar said, yeah, like it's his thing, all right. And like, I don't like it. Weegar shrugs and goes, hey, if he keeps scoring goals, he can do whatever he wants. But I told him and I discussed it. I don't like it because he leaves me hanging. I go over there to give him a hug, a high five, whatever, and he's staring at some fan, and he leaves me hanging. So I told him next time he scores, I'm just going straight to the bench. That's it. You kind of lost me. And so they're having fun with it, and, you know, he's having fun with it. He says it's, you know, yeah, there's a little bit of the old FU attitude in it, but it's at the end of the day, it's just something. He likes to rile up the fans. He likes to rile up the other team, more importantly. And I think it's just an extension of that. He's a guy who likes to, who's not scared to show his emotions. Yeah. And that's just kind of an example of it. And it's kind of on fun. Like, as Weegar said, it's on brand. It's on brand. He likes to get the crowd going and the fans into it. So I'm okay with it. I just wish he would acknowledge me when I come over and congratulate him.
It's like me. It's like me whenever I see you in public. I just wish you'd acknowledge me. Like, hey, I'm right here. Like,
yeah.
You always just pretend I don't exist. And it hurts my feelings.
That's so funny. You're hilarious. But he did say that the fan in Vancouver, and we showed the video at the Flames game the other day on our broadcast, the TV broadcast.
Yeah.
And the Vancouver fan is just staring up at the scoreboard. Raz said, I'm like, buddy, I'm staring you down. I'm staring through your soul right now. Can you at least look at me? He said the fan didn't even notice me. So it doesn't have the same effect as it does in Edmonton. The guy yelled back some choice words immediately. You know, real tough guy when there's glass in between them. But anyway, it can rile up some fans. So others don't even notice it's happening. So that's kind of funny too.
You know, as I think about that, do you remember, and this, you know, is different but similar. Do you remember that it was when Steve Sullivan was playing in Chicago and where some guy was
amazing
chirping him all night in Colorado, I believe it was, chirping him all night. And then all of a sudden the glass caves in on the guy and the guy's got a bloody nose and Sullivan skates by him and chirps him back. And it's like, okay, that is one of the great NHL moments.
People need to Google that because it is so great. Because also, I think Sullivan takes a puck in the face earlier in the night too.
Yes, that's what it was.
And the fans chirping him. And look, it's funny. This just recently happened to me playing just beer league hockey with the boys. Like, you take a slap shot off the foot or something, and someone decides that they want to chirp you, even good-naturedly, that's not the time. When someone's in significant pain, you don't take chirping very lightly. Like, it really drives you nuts. So he was getting chirped while he was hurt, and then it was just so beautiful that it was payback time. And the reaction from the fan after Sullivan chirps him is even more priceless than the story itself. Yeah, so Google that if you guys get a chance.
Go check out that article, by the way, on the Razzie death stare. See if Rasmus busted up. Like, it feels like it has more impact against on the road in Edmonton or on the road in Vancouver. Like, if you were to bust that out, I don't know, in like Carolina, I don't know if it would have the same effect.
Good call.
But against the fans
two
like
rivals.
That. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good point. And I don't know what hey, look, he scored enough goals at home over the years, and he didn't need to do that. He can celebrate any way he wants. But, you know, I'm kind of curious now, the next goal, whether it's in Seattle on Saturday or if it's at home on Tuesday, you know, does he still do some sort of stare basically to the world? Like, hey, look, we're showing you guys again. We can do this. Yep. Like, everybody bugger off. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
The other story that you wrote that I know got a lot of good traction was on Justin Kirkland. And first of all credit in the world to Kirkland because he has been outstanding. Three games, and all three games he's been an impact maker. The last two games he centered Calgary's kind of best line with Lomberg and Coronado. I know Rooney's getting closer, but right now you can't take Kirkland out. He's got 2 points in three games. He's playing well. He's playing physically. And not only is that a good story, because a guy who's 28 years old scores his first NHL goal, then a game later picks up his first NHL assist. Like, that's always awesome when a journeyman who's worked this hard to get to this point ends up bearing some fruit from it. That's always a good story. You're always happy to see that. But it goes a whole lot deeper than that, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think people have heard by now about the accident he was in. But, you know, I really dug deeper into what happened that fateful afternoon, and he had just played his first 7 games as an NHLer and start like he was really getting some traction in the NHL. This is in January of 2023, so not too long ago. He's in Anaheim. He's on his way to the Honda Center for a game against Boston and on his way to the rink. You know, and he doesn't remember anything about the accident, but he just what he does remember is sideswiping an SUV and then going across a bunch of lanes of a, you know, California highway.
Oof.
The northbound 5 highway is what it is for those who drive around that area. And he goes right across and he crashed into the center median. And, you know, of course, as he's careening across all those lanes of traffic, you know, at any point in time, you could get absolutely T-boned and it could be game over. So he woke up in the ambulance, wasn't sure what happened. Like, talk about everybody's worst nightmare, waking up in an ambulance going like, what's going on? Like, I have no idea what's going on. Kind of was in and out of consciousness. Then wakes up in the hospital and his wife and his coach at the time are both sitting there, and he just has nothing but incredible things to say about Dallas Eakins, who was the guy who was there providing his wife with support and, you know, making sure she wasn't alone as her husband was, you know, dealing with life-threatening injuries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bunch of facial reconstruction, obviously head trauma of all sorts. And it took him 12 weeks to come back, and he wasn't sure if he was ever going to play again, that he wasn't sure if he wanted to play. Like, this guy's obviously driven. He'd spent already 6.5 years in the minors chasing this dream, and he was just realizing it. And he goes from top of the mountain to the back to the bottom of the mountain, you know, in a matter of one drive to the rink. And, you know, he said he came back later that year to try and show, like, he was on a 1-year contract. He was trying to show, look, no, I'm healed, I'm okay. But he wasn't. And before he even got a chance to prove it, they waived him again and put him back down in the minors. And he never got back in, you know, that year. So just you know, these mountains in front of him that he's been climbing constantly, it just makes the, you know, summiting and getting his first goal all the more sweeter. And I asked him the other day, you know, he got his first assist, you know, he'd already got his first goal and he got the puck and all that, and they make a big to-do about it. I go, what do they do with your first assist? He goes, how do I know? I've never been here before. I don't know what they do when you get your first assist. Like, this is all new to me. And he ends almost every sentence with, I'm just loving every minute of it. I'm living out my dream. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, but right now I'm just living to the max right now. And this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And man, how many times in your life do you have someone say that to you, like in any walk of life?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's quite fun to be along this ride with him, you know, as Flames fans and media types. This is a guy who is literally living that whole credo. I'm living for the day because I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring.
Yep.
And, you know, the reality is, Pat, and I keep putting this in my articles when I write about this guy, like when Rooney comes back, Kirkland's probably going to be sent back down right away. Like, I hate to say it, and nobody really wants to kind of say it out loud, but it's probably what's going to happen, right? You'd like to think that he's played so well that he's earned it and they can't possibly take him out of the lineup. And maybe they will feel that way and find a spot for him. Or maybe there'll be another injury, like the Sam Morton one, that kind of opened up some more spots, and maybe he can stay as that 13th forward. I don't know, but I don't want it to end, and I don't think many fans do either.
Well, I'll say this much. Because Hanzek got hurt, all of a sudden, they don't need to send Kirkland down. And
that's right.
And as it stands right now, you know, if you're Ryan Huska, like, Kirkland's in. Like, right now, you're trying to ice the best possible lineup. And I know that Kevin Rooney got 2 shifts of his season before he got hurt, or maybe 1 shift. But fact is, Kirkland is right now a part of their best 12 forwards. And because Hanzek can go on IR when they activate Rooney off of IR, because they won't need to make an additional roster move, you know, for the time being, you can keep Kirkland as your number 4 center. And if you want to rotate Rooney in, you can do that. You can rotate him in on the wing if you want. You can rotate him in at center if you want to. Hey, we want to get Rooney back in. Justin, this is nothing against you. Maybe he has a game where he's not as effective and he comes out for a game and Rooney gets back in. But for the time being, the door is open for Kirkland to remain on the roster, and he has fully earned that right to do so.
It's just great. it's just a great story. And like I said, nobody wants it to end. And so, yeah, hey, listen, injuries happen. And the more will come, obviously. So that just opens up more opportunities. And so, yeah, it also allows him to stay up. And, hey, they get another injury. They're going to have to pull somebody else up. But I think everybody, again, part of the fun of this year for observers and for fans is who's next?
Yep.
Who's next? You know, when are we going to see Pelche? Are we going to see Pelche this year? I'm not, you know, depending on who gets injured and what position, you know, how long does someone have to prove themselves with the Wranglers before they get that look? And, you know, last year we were all stunned when it was Pospisil. Nobody, what? Pospisil? Like,
yeah.
He was fifth or sixth or seventh on anybody's depth chart. This year, I guarantee you, somebody's going to get summoned that nobody was really thinking about. They'll think, well, surely it would be, like at this point, Rory Karen's 5 goals in 3 games. Surely he's going to finally get a look. Or, you know, not finally. It's not like he's been around forever. But, you know, but it could be Sam Morton. It could be, you know, who knows? That's part of the fun this season.
Well, as we start to wrap things up, those two articles are live right now at sportsnet.ca. Rasmus Anderson and the Razzie Death Stare, and a real deep dive on Justin Kirkland's path and tough journey to the NHL and where he is right now. Both really good reads from EF at sportsnet.ca. Thanks, great stuff as always, pal. Yeah, go ahead.
Before we leave, I enjoyed your mailbag today. But I just wondering when you're going to answer my question. I keep sending my question into the mailbag and you never answer it.
Which one is that again?
Why do you keep skipping leg days?
You know what? You just sometimes, my answer would be this. Sometimes you just know your limitations and you stop fighting it. That's why, look, you can't fight genetics. I got small calves. It is what it is.
Okay, there it is. Like, I finally got my question.
I'm sorry. It must be because I have you muted on Twitter or something like that. That must be the reason why.
Yeah, probably. You never saw it. Okay, fair enough. All right, buddy. Have a great weekend and enjoy the game tomorrow.
You too, pal, and congrats on another successful Pizza Pig out, my friend. Have a great weekend. Thanks, EF.
Cheers, buddy.
Eric Francis is on Twitter, at Eric Francis, as we start to wrap things up this hour. And funny enough, this has been the Eric Francis Hour. It's brought to you each and every time by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.